The Ain't No Fang Podcast. From Arizona Sports, Ain't No Fang.
Hooray for beer!
Hooray, beer!
I'm Steve Zinsmeister. That's Cody Fincher with you as well on the Ain't No Fang Podcast. And we are celebrating. I mean, don't get me wrong. The Diamondbacks are still terrible, and they are still in last place.
Steve, you forgot the six-pack.
I'm sorry?
You forgot to bring in a six-pack.
Oh, I didn't realize
What's
that was my responsibility.
Did I not text you?
Guess
that?
I should have known. Seth Beer.
We can bring that into work, right? No problem.
Yeah, right. Seth Beer is a major leaguer, and we're happy about that. We were hoping that he would get called up at some point. I don't even remember if we talked about this last week or if it had happened yet, but Seth Beer gets called up to the major leagues, makes his debut, hits a home run, by the way, in his first at-bat.
First at-bat.
How about that? Then, because we just can't have nice things here in Arizona, it was immediately taken away from us.
Ain't that the truth, man?
Seth Beer was playing first base in his first start, I believe, defensively.
Correct.
Is that right?
Correct. First start at first base in the major leagues.
He was playing first base, dove for a ground ball, or line drive. I think it was a ground ball, and separated his shoulder. So,
yeah, dislocated his shoulder.
That's super cool.
And it was weird because I looked at the replay a bunch and I'm like, where would he have possibly dislocated his shoulder? But I've never dived for a ground ball, so I don't know. But
dove?
Is it dove?
Doved. Doven.
Divin.
I've never divin.
Divid.
I think we'll go with that.
Divd.
I'm not shocked that you haven't doved for a ball before.
Yeah. So, and I don't know. Maybe the dirt in LA is really hard. They don't have a lot of water in California, so I don't know.
True.
But like, I was like, what? How? Because the person I was working the game with on the board for the play by play game was, we were both thinking it was like a wrist or something, because that's normally what you hurt when you dive for a ground ball or a line drive or something.
Yeah,
your wrist, your glove gets caught underneath your arm, and you tweak your wrist. But and then I saw the tweet later. I'm like, are you kidding me? A dislocated shoulder for Seth Beer. I'm like shoulders with this team. Shoulders just automatically are an injury. Corbin Carroll, shoulder injury, out for the season.
Right.
Jordan Lawler on a dive, shoulder injury, out for the season. Seth Beer, shoulder injury. Now, I will say this, Seth Beer spoke with the media that night, and he moved his arm around pretty freely. There was no sling on his left arm or shoulder, and he hasn't been placed, as of right now, he has not been placed on the injured list. So
that's a weird thing about dislocations, is sometimes
they just popped it back in.
Sometimes you just pop it back in and you're good. Now, there's situations like Fernando Tatis, who just signed like a $350 million deal or whatever it was.
Yeah.
And in his case, they wanted to be extra super careful because they paid so much money for this guy. So in that case, they're like, maybe we'll play him in the outfield so he doesn't throw as much.
What's funny about that now is that they've had an injury. I think it's Cronenworth got hurt and fractured his finger or something on his hand, or his whole hand. I can't remember. And now Tatis has to move back to shortstop. So he's been playing shortstop.
Yeah, again. I think he's been prepared to do that.
Tatis is like, if he swings too hard, his shoulder comes out of socket. So that's just weird.
Corbin Carroll.
He's going to have surgery probably in the offseason to fix that stuff.
That could be the case. But
anyway,
I'll tell you this. I've dislocated one thing in my life, and it's going to be very uneventful compared to this. But I once dislocated the top knuckle of my middle finger on my right hand.
How'd you do that?
I was playing softball. I was playing third base, and with a couple of my buddies, I was in high school, and I was playing third base, and they hit a screaming line drive right at me, right? And I go to catch it. You know the way you're supposed to catch a line drive. You catch it with two hands, one behind the glove, right? Well, I had my hand behind the net, like the webbing of the glove.
Yeah.
So the ball goes in there and, you know, really hard impact, like you would expect.
Uh-huh.
And there was a runner at second base, and he's going to third on impact. So I catch the ball. Hitter is out. Runner still hasn't gone back to second base, so I turn to throw the ball to the second baseman, who's now at second base.
Uh-huh.
And when I picked the ball out of my glove, it felt like the middle finger went through the ball. Because I don't know yet that I've dislocated just one knuckle, not the whole finger, just the top knuckle. So when I went to hold the ball, it felt like my finger went through it. And I was like, that's weird. But I threw it to second base.
That's weird.
Get the guy out. And I went to do the whole, like, all right, two down, you know, like where you lift your hands up. And I did that. And the second baseman looks at me and goes, dude, look at your hand. And I looked at it, and the top knuckle is just completely off of my finger. I mean, it's just dangling.
And
that's the only thing I've ever hurt, never broken anything in my life. But this is where I'm going with this. At that point, I'm on the sideline. My dad is at the game, and my dad goes, well, you just want me to pop it back in? And I was like, I don't know if I love you that much. I don't know if I trust you enough to do this. And so we tried it, and it didn't work, right? And so I had to go to the doctor that night. No, it didn't work. It wouldn't want to go back in for whatever reason. So it just hurt like hell. And I went to the doctor's office, and they said, well, the only thing we can do is pop it back in.
We
tried that already. He goes, I'm a professional.
I'm a doctor.
Let me handle it. I'm like, okay, urgent care doctor. And so he goes, and he tries to push it back in, and it won't go. And he pushes so hard that they tore the tendon. And I now have to have I had a splint on my finger for like 3 months.
Jeez.
Not that you should
care
about that.
Good job, urgent care doctor.
But my point is, sometimes these things can be tricky, and sometimes, like it appears with Seth Beer, it's as easy as popping it back in.
I've never dislocated anything. The only thing that I've ever broken, I broke my nose playing pickup basketball. My friend went for the rebound. We were on different teams. My friend went for the rebound, and he missed the ball and backhanded me in the face.
Oh.
And I'm like, I get my nose. You can probably still see it. It's still broken.
Oh, okay. Is that what that is?
Yeah, it's still broken.
I thought that was just your face.
No, thank you. I think it's distinguished like Owen Wilson's nose, okay?
Yeah, but we'll go with that.
But anyway, like I get hit in the face, and I can't open my eyes because, you know, if you get hit in the face or your nose, something happened. I could not open my eyes. They were just like teared up, so watery.
Yeah,
because they got hit in the nose. And there was I was at school when this happened. So a teacher came over. He's like, "Is there blood?" I'm like, "No." And as soon as I said no, I felt drip, drip, drip on my hands, and I'm like, "Yes." And so my mom picks me up from school, and she's like, "What happened to you?"
Yeah.
And I'm like, "I don't know. I got hit in the face. I think my nose is broken." So she took me to the doctor. And they said, well, if you want to fix it, we're going to have to re-break it.
And put it back.
Yeah. And I'm like, no, I'm good. Bye. And I left.
Wow.
And we left.
So you just left it broken?
Yeah, it's broken.
And then it just healed over time?
I guess. I do have a chronic, like, stuffy nose, and I don't know if that has to do with my nose being broken or
not.
Wow.
We're discovering things on the air today.
You can't see it, everyone, but it's broken.
Well, by all indications, I mean, they haven't put Seth Beer on the IL yet.
Yeah, I know. So
he could be back.
I'm hoping that maybe it was just as simple as like, all right, it came out. All right, let's do Lethal Weapon style. Just smack it back in on the wall here or whatever.
I fully expect that when we finish this podcast today, we will get a press release.
100%. He is going on the injury list.
No. I was going to say the opposite.
Oh, what were you
saying? I fully believe that after this podcast, we will get the lineup for tonight or something.
Oh, sure.
And he'll be on it and he'll be playing. I fully expect that will happen. But as of now, we have nothing to report.
They are in Houston, so they do have the DH. So
that's an interesting aspect.
I doubt we'll see him at first base.
His former team, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
Because we acquired Seth Beer.
Josh Rojas,
Corbin Martin.
Bukauskas.
JB Bukauskas in the Zach Greinke deal.
Yep.
It could be. Wait, who's pitching tonight for the Astros? Do you
know?
Is it Greinke? Because that would be a great story.
Who the heck is this guy? Brandon Bialik. I don't know his name. Let me see if I. Yeah, he's pitching on Sunday. Greinke is
okay.
So there we go.
Could be an opportunity for him to face the player that he got traded for. That's kind of interesting.
That'd be really funny if like Rojas and Beer both go yard off Greinke. No, he's gonna throw them like 69-mile-an-hour curveballs, and they're gonna strike out.
I love going to games where there's storylines like that from like player to player, where it's like first time he's faced the player he got traded for.
Yeah,
I went to a Padres game in San Diego a couple weeks ago where it was the first time that Austin and Aaron Nola faced each other, brothers.
Yeah, didn't Aaron Nola almost throw a perfect game when you went?
Almost, yeah. He took a perfect game into the seventh, I think. And
that's cool.
Yeah, and it was the first time they ever faced each other. And I kept thinking to myself, what happens if Austin Nola is the one that breaks up the perfect game? Could you imagine if your brother,
how's that,
of all people?
How's that dinner going to go?
Yeah, how does that go over at Thanksgiving?
Man.
Yeah. Hey, remember that time I had a perfect game going into the ninth and you ruined it?
Yeah, and Austin be like, yeah, dude, it was great.
Yeah, it was awesome.
It was awesome.
I was there. So that's the latest on Seth Beer. We don't know. But he's not on the IL, so we...
That's good news, honestly.
Kind of expect he could be back.
Because that happened a couple days ago, so you'd figure if he needed to go on the injured list, they... But, you know, sometimes teams wait until right before the game to announce those, you know, those moves. Like, well, prior to tonight's game, Seth Beer was placed on the injured list.
Yeah, blah, they could blah, make blah, it blah. Retroactive, yeah, I guess.
Yeah, they could. I hate when they do that. Why? Why bother? But...
Yeah. It just leaves us
at this
suspense.
Point. It's like, what are the Diamondbacks trying to hide from the Houston Astros? You know, like, oh, we don't want you to know who's coming up because of competitive advantage.
He was kind of off to a hot start, by the way. Not only did he have the home run, yeah. but three RBIs and in nine at bats. It's not a lot, don't get me wrong, but hitting .444 and on base half the time, that's a pretty good start to the first nine at bats.
He's a good hitter, man. Like you said, he homered in his first at bat in the major leagues. And he just looks like he has a good idea of the strike zone. I believe I read somewhere that he was leading the trip. I don't know if it was all minor leagues or just the AAA level. If he was leading in hit by pitches, I think he was leading in that.
Oh,
and he was top in walks too. So he seems to have a decent idea of the strike zone. And I think he's going to be a good hitter. Now, of course, and we've talked about this before, the big question with Seth Beer is, can he find a place in the field to play? Because you know, when they first got him, I remember they were trying him like maybe, you know, in the outfield a little bit and first base, kind of like Pavin Smith. But I think there's also the chance too that next year, after the collective bargaining agreement is settled, hopefully that's soon, but knowing baseball and the players union, that's not going to happen.
I'm not going to hold my breath.
Hopefully there is a universal designated hitter so that things like this won't matter as much. So Seth Beer could just be your DH if he proves that he is not going to be a quality first baseman in the field, and you have a DH now, he's your DH. There you go. Problem solved.
Yeah. I heard Torrey got asked about that too, by the way. And I'll paraphrase it, but basically he said, yeah, we're cognizant of all these things could change. You know,
right.
We could get a DH or we could not get a DH, and all of a sudden he has to be a first baseman, or, you know, we could try him at other spots. So it was an answer, but it was also kind of a non-answer.
Right,
you know, what is the plan for Seth Beer? And quite frankly, the organization is at the point where they might not have a perfect plan for, all right, this guy's going to be our first baseman of the future. This guy's going to be our second baseman of the future, because there's a lot of moving parts, as we've discussed at length here. Ketel Marte.
Yeah.
Where the heck does he play? He's your best player, and you don't even know what position
like
he's
playing. This organization for a while now has not been an organization where they go, we have this. We have a shortstop of the future. We have a second baseman, first baseman, center fielder, whatever. All their players play multiple positions.
Which can be good.
It's good, but I think eventually you want guys to settle down just a little bit. Like a guy like Pavin Smith, okay? He is a first baseman. But he's been playing in right field and sometimes in center field and left field too. But I saw him take a route to a ball in LA in one of those games that was just horrible. It was terrible. And I think Torrey said after the game he might have lost the ball in the lights and just stopped running toward where he thought the ball was going to be. And so the ball dropped down and went for extra bases. But so that might be excusable. But there's still things where, you know, playing multiple positions and you don't really have all your time and focus set on being good, like at right field for Pavin Smith. If they said, Pavin, you're going to be our starting right fielder next year, I guarantee you all this offseason, he's going to be working mostly at right. Now he probably will still like put on a first baseman's glove every now and then because, you know, people need days off and all that stuff. And he's probably going to be asked to play first base every now and again. But for the most part, if they want him in right field, he's going to work at playing right field more than not.
Well, and keep in mind, too, most of the players on the Diamondbacks that are playing multiple positions often, I'm thinking Dalton Varsho, Pavin Smith.
Dalton Varsho especially.
Josh Rojas to a degree. A lot of these guys, they're not playing comparable positions. They're not moving from left field to right field.
They're
not moving from catcher to first. Dalton Varsho is a catcher and an outfielder.
Yeah.
Tell me those two things are similar.
He's moving from catcher to center field.
Right.
Like,
Right, Pavin Smith, first base, right field. I know that some guys do it, like Joey Gallo or something,
yeah,
or Cody Bellinger, but those guys are also supreme fielders.
Yeah.
They're incredible outfielders.
Cody Bellinger was a good first baseman, and then he moved to the outfield, and he's a Gold Glover now, basically.
Right. Those guys can play center field,
yeah,
which I do not want Pavin Smith doing. No, I mean, I understand occasionally, but I'm at the point where a lot of these guys, I'm like you, I prefer that they be set in stone. I mean, like, even for their own purposes, when you go to work, you'd like to know what you're doing at work.
Yeah.
Like, what is my objective today?
I keep going back to the argument I make often is what the Diamondbacks tried to do with Chris Owings. He was pretty much their everyday second baseman before Ketel Marte kind of burst onto the scene.
Yeah.
When Ketel Marte first got here, he was kind of like, he was playing second base, he was playing shortstop, he was playing both of those positions, and then he finally, you know, solidified himself and became the second baseman and then the center fielder. But
yeah, I was going to say, wait,
before they got over. Before they got Ketel Marte and before he became a everyday player for this team, Chris Owings was pretty much your everyday second baseman. And then they decided to try to make him a super utility guy that can play literally every position. And I don't know this. I've never known it. I haven't talked to anybody about it. But just my opinion is that I think that affected his offense, because he really fell off there at the end of his tenure with the Diamondbacks offensively. And I think it could be because he was trying to learn 8 different positions on the field, you know? And I just don't want... I mean, maybe it's more common now for that to happen with ball players, but like Josh Rojas is still playing really well, and he's playing second, short, and I think he was playing third the other day. I don't know.
Capable of playing
right
outfield,
field, left
yeah.
field, you know? So I guess it's more common, and maybe I shouldn't worry about it that much, but that's just that's always my thought, is I would rather have a guy play one position and have his focus there. If it's gonna negatively affect your offense because you're so focused on, oh, today I got to go out and learn how to play center field and left field today, okay, tomorrow I got to learn how to play shortstop and, you know, second base, whatever. But I don't know, it's just my opinion.
Well, to me, there are guys that fit the role of super utility who, that's how they make their role on the team.
Kike
if
Hernandez.
If they can't do that, then they're probably not on the team.
Kike Hernandez is the perfect example of that for the Dodgers.
Marwin Gonzalez,
yep. Brock Holt.
The best one I can think of, probably in our lifetime, Ben Zobrist.
Oh, yeah.
And Ben Zobrist was a good hitter, don't get me wrong. But Ben Zobrist was good on contributed to, what, the 2016 World Series Cubs, a long time with the Rays.
Mm-hmm.
He contributed the most because he could play multiple positions.
Yep.
But just because somebody can play multiple positions doesn't mean they should. I'm cool with if you have a utility guy. Like, I always kind of thought of Chris Owings as, all right, if he doesn't play multiple positions, I don't know where to put him.
That's a good point because, you know,
I was okay with it.
He wasn't Ketel Marte where could stick him at second base every day and be fine. I mean,
right.
He wasn't that good offensively to just say, okay, you're in the lineup every day right here. So, like, I guess that makes sense. That makes sense.
To me...
But I don't think Pavin Smith is that. I think...
He shouldn't be.
I think Pavin Smith should either be most of the time in right field or most of the time at first base. You can still play him in right field. That's fine. He's a decent right fielder. But I think his future is at first base for this team. And I mean, and that's what complicates things. If there is no DH in the National League going forward, what do you do with Seth Beer?
Yeah.
Do you, and at that point, if there is no DH, do you make Seth Beer your first baseman and Pavin Smith your everyday right fielder?
Or do you trade him?
Which one?
Beer.
Oh.
Listen, this is not what I'm suggesting.
Why are
doing.
You, why?
No. But hear me out. There are,
I don't want to hear you.
There were other players in this organization that they missed their window to do so. Yasmani Tomas, I know the experiment failed. They wasted a lot of money. But Yasmani was the best hitter in AAA at the tail end of his time with the Diamondbacks. And for what it's worth, Seth Beer was the same this year.
Mm-hmm.
And there might have been an opportunity for them to move Yasmani. And I'm sure they explored every opportunity, and it probably wouldn't have happened. But look to it, Kevin Crone. Kevin Crone was one of the best hitters in the minor leagues. and they just kind of let him go because there wasn't really a spot for him. You had Christian Walker, who at the time was replacing Paul Goldschmidt and doing it well. And then you had guys like Pavin Smith, and then they traded Greinke for a beer. So now there's other guys above Krohn on the depth chart. Mm-hmm. So he just kind of faded away, and he goes overseas to play. Is there a chance? I think you make it work no matter what with Beer and Smith. I think they should. I think they will. But is there a possibility that they see Smith as the long-term first baseman, and they look at Beer, and there's no DH, and they're like, I don't know what to do. So they have an opportunity to move one of those guys. It's possible. It's possible. It's just not likely.
Or you're,
and I'm not recommending.
Or you
it.
Just stick Seth Beer in left field, where
that's a defensive liability.
Old school thinking by me, honestly. Just remember how it used to be, where your worst defender, your worst outfielder, they just stuck him in left field. Barry Bonds at the
Adam Dunn.
Yeah.
Miguel Cabrera.
Barry Bonds was a terrible fielder.
Albert
they
Pujols.
Just stuck him in left field.
Albert Pujols was a left fielder, rookie year. Look it up.
Really?
Yeah. Played left field.
Then they moved him to first, and
Now I'm second guessing myself. Hold on, I'm going to look it up.
I think you're right.
He and Miguel Cabrera, I think, both played left field, and then moved to third, and then moved to first.
Alfonso Soriano came up as a second baseman, and they moved him to left field. Bad defender.
Well, he didn't just come up as a second baseman. He was really good as a second baseman.
Yeah,
with the Yankees when they won the
home runs in the World Series against.
And
the
then I think he even played second base with Texas. So yeah, that's different. But I forgot what I was looking up already. I don't care. moving on. Another player that the Diamondbacks.
It's going great.
Yeah, it's going really well. Oh, yeah, Albert Pujols. Henry Ramos is another name I wanted to talk about. He came up a couple weeks ago. I don't want to say he's made like a splash, because I don't think people around the league are like, oh, who's this guy? It's not Yasiel Puig or whatever.
But Henry Ramos
came up. He's been mashing in the minor leagues this year. Kind of went under the radar a bit. He's an 11-year minor leaguer, so it took him forever to get here, but he's finally here, making an impact with the Diamondbacks, and then made a signature play in the outfield this week where he totally robbed Mookie Betts of extra bases.
That was a great play. He looks like he's got a good feel for the corner outfield spots. And, you know, the question now is like, okay, he 29 years old? Yeah, he's 29 years old. So he's not a long-term solution, I guess, if you want to call it that, or a long-term piece for this team, I don't think. But he's playing really well. I mean, since he's come up, I mean, he's hitting .250. He's got 6 hits and 24 at-bats. He's hit a home run, 6 RBIs. On-base percentage, .308. His OPS is .724. It's not bad. He could be a utility outfielder for this team next year, and he might be, honestly, with the way that this team is going, if they commit to the rebuilding direction that they seem to be going in. We never know, really, with the Diamondbacks. I remember when Mike Hazen and Torrey Lovello first got here, the whole thought with those two guys were, oh, they're going to rebuild. The Diamondbacks aren't that good. They're going to rebuild. And then in 2017, they were a playoff team.
Unexpectedly good.
Yeah, and then they kind of have been in this in-between type stuff ever since. Ever since 2017, I feel like they've kind of been like, well, we can still be competitive, but we don't want to spend all that money, and then, you know, blah, blah, blah. Here we are.
Well, before 2020, they went for it.
They went for it.
I don't want to say they went all in.
But they went for it.
But they made some good moves. They brought over Cole Calhoun, who was a good player in L.A., and then
good fielder hits home runs.
Their outfield has been devastated for years, so that was a good move. They went out and traded for Starling Marte, who,
great move.
As far as center fielders go, I think he was a little under the radar.
He might be
one of the better corner outfielders.
He might be a top outfielder now, honestly.
Yeah. All of a sudden, he's skyrocketed.
He's turned into a star.
We shouldn't be shocked by that.
And then
he's a former Diamondback.
And then they had David Peralta, who's been a mainstay in left field, a couple gold gloves.
Who is now depreciating in value as he gets older.
And then that year in 2020, they went for it. They got Bumgarner. They went and paid for Madison Bumgarner.
Yeah.
And they thought, they didn't trade Robbie Ray. They thought he was going to be great in 2020. And then COVID happened.
They were just a year off. No big deal.
It all went to crap. Yeah, right. COVID, like, put everything off a year.
Yeah.
Because Madison Bumgarner was terrible in 2020. He was. And then this year he's been okay. He's kind of been what you've expected.
He went through a really rough patch, and then he went through a really good patch.
Yeah, that stretch when he went on the injured list, and then he came back. He was great. He was pitching so well, and then he's kind of fallen back down to earth recently, but
don't forget he also threw a no-hitter this year. Just don't tell Major League Baseball because they won't agree.
Notable achievement.
Bull crap. Henry Ramos, I don't want to get too far ahead of us because I know that he's only got like what 24 at bats, and he's hitting .250. He's on base .308. Okay, so it's not super impressive offensively, but he's kind of been an interesting piece in a position in the corner outfield spots where I don't know what the future is in the corner outfield. I don't want to say David Peralta will be around forever. I don't want to say that Pavin Smith is a lock as their right fielder long term. Cole Calhoun is still a question mark and a big one. They don't really have a center fielder unless you say Ketel Marte is playing there for the rest of time.
Alec Thomas is going to come up soon.
Yeah. So
and is he even a center fielder? I don't know. But
I guess I'll ask you this. By also answering it myself, is that I see a role for Henry Ramos for the future. Do you see a role for Henry Ramos in the immediate future? I'm talking like spring training next year. Does he get an invite?
Yeah, I think he gets an invite to spring training. I think he has a chance to be a utility outfielder for this team. I think he's going to get chances in left and right. I don't know if he plays much center field. I'm not sure. But I think if he has a good spring training next year, I think it's pretty reasonable to say that he could make the team next year. It depends on what they do in the offseason, man. I feel like they're not going to do very much. There's a lot of good free agents out there this year, though. It's crazy. But I don't think they're going to be in on a lot of those guys. So I think he does have a chance to make the team. He's going to be going into his age 30 season. So he's probably not got much time left, but you never know. But I think if he plays well and makes the team, I think he will probably be a bench outfielder, but I think he's going to get a lot of playing time. He's a switch hitter. And he is very aggressive when in the box. He swings at the it could be a downside too, but he swings at the first pitch a lot. But he seems to be a good fielder as well. And I know that this organization values defense, even though I feel like the most I've seen Torrey this pissed off is when they just have these stupid inexcusable defensive miscues that they've been having this year. That's where he gets most frustrated, because that's kind of what he's preached ever since he's gotten here. We're going to play really good defense. And this year they're not playing good defense. I don't know how many errors they have, but it's gotta be, I think it's over 85 errors this year. And that's just not what Torrey Lovello is about. He is about good defense and good pitching. And they haven't had that this year at all.
Call me crazy too, but I think David Peralta's time as the leader of the face of the organization in a lot of ways is waning. I'm not saying it's over, it's waning, and he's not going to be around forever in the outfield. And so a guy like Henry Ramos to me can become a guy like David Peralta, who let's remember David Peralta's career has not exactly been a straight shot. Mm-hmm. It started as a pitcher.
Yep.
And he worked his way into becoming an outfielder and a very good hitter who hit for high average, could hit for some power in his prime, won a gold glove. So a guy like that, like Henry Ramos, who spent 11 years in the minors, yeah, you could argue, okay, if he was really that good, he would have made the major leagues. But at the same time, not everybody's career is like that. Not everybody makes the majors in four years.
And not everyone is good right away. I mean, he could have been doing something that wasn't good, and then a new coach comes in here or there and says, hey, why don't you try this instead of what you've been doing? And then all of a sudden, here we go. Look at Robbie Ray. It's the same thing.
Yeah.
He tried so many things, like tapping the glove, over the head windup, and now he's
cut my hair off, grow my hair out,
shave my beard, grow a big beard.
Yeah, right. He tried everything except pitching better,
and then he goes to Toronto, and I'm sure, I don't know who their pitching coach is, but I'm sure he goes up to him and say, hey, why are you doing this weird stuff? I watched your tape last year. What's going on? And let's just do this. Let's simplify things again. A lot of times, it's a lot of simplifying things. You're getting you're too in your head. You're thinking way too much about your windup or just pitch, dude. And look at him now. He's going to probably win the Cy Young Award in the American League.
That's kind of why I'm excited about Henry Ramos, is that I feel like the Diamondbacks kind of caught lightning in a bottle a little bit with Christian Walker, who is in a similar spot where, you know, he was waived by the Baltimore Orioles, who are arguably the only team worse than the Diamondbacks right now. He was waived by them a long time ago. The Diamondbacks ended up getting him, and he was older when he got called up. I mean, he was already older than Jake Lamb, who was already playing first base. Uh-huh. So, in a way, they kind of caught lightning in a bottle there, and I think maybe they could with Henry Ramos, too. I don't know. Let's talk about, this is inevitably the conversation that always ends up happening towards the end of a cycle like this, where the Diamondbacks are likely to end the season with the worst record in baseball. They have 99 losses currently, so they're probably going to hit 100. I'm guessing they're going
well,
to 100.
Let's see. They have how many games
left?
They
have like 2 weeks left.
Can I just look at their schedule real quick, because it's not good.
We're guessing they're not going to go on a tear.
Let's see. Where are they at here? 17. They have 3 games in Houston this weekend.
Not good.
They host the Atlanta Braves, who are in first place in their division, for 4 games Monday through Thursday. Then they host the Dodgers for 3 games.
Oof.
At San Francisco for 3 games. And then they finish the season at home October 1st to the 3rd against the Colorado Rockies.
Well, that'll be nice.
They might win a game there.
Let's all agree that the Diamondbacks are going to reach 100 losses, okay? Let's just leave it at that. We don't have to make it any worse than that. With that comes historic losing, and with that comes the conversation around the manager, Torey Lovello. And we know this. We've talked about this. He has managed this entire season without an extension underneath his contract to extend him into next year or beyond that. Management has said, you know, he doesn't need the extension to be able to manage this team. He has said it's not something that he thinks about all that much. But we got to talk about it, because I think you and I have agreed all along that Torey Lovello is a good manager. He's good at what he does. We're not saying he's bad. Sometimes I'll joke about a player who's like, you know, like Jake Lamb, and I'll say he's not good at baseball. Of course he's good at baseball. He's just not playing well. Torey is like that in that, of course he's a good manager. He's good at baseball. He just hasn't been doing well this year. Their team is historically bad when you look at the franchise. So the question is, what do you do with Torey 2 weeks from now?
In my opinion, I do not think Torey Lovello will be back next year. I don't think so. The fact that he's managing on a basically a lame duck contract, his contract's up after this year, and I don't think they wanted to fire him. I think they respect each other too much, and I think the front office does like him a lot. I don't think he'll be back next year. I think they're just going to not renew his contract and part ways with him. I don't know what the right answer is, honestly. If he's not back next year, I would have liked to have seen them try to give Torey a good roster again. His first season in 2017, he was the manager of the year, the NL manager of the year. They went to the playoffs that year because they were unexpectedly, like we said before, when Torey Lovello and Mike Hazen got to town, everyone was like, okay, they're going to rebuild this team. They're going to Theo Epstein this team, basically. And they were good their first year. And they bought at the trade deadline. They got J.D. Martinez, and he hit 50 home runs in the second half. Like, he hit, basically.
A little bit of an exaggeration, but yeah, pretty much.
He hit a home run in almost every game they got him.
Sure felt like it.
Uniform. And they had really good pitching from Greinke. Robbie Ray was amazing that year. Archie Bradley really solidified the whole bullpen. Fernando Rodney, it was a roller coaster. The Rodney Express was a roller coaster of a ride. But he got a ton of saves, and he was pretty good for them. And they had guys like Daniel Descalso. They had that team where guys off the bench are even... Daniel Descalso had a couple walk-off hits.
He was clutch.
Yeah, he was a clutch player. Nick Ahmed was good defensively. Jake Lamb was an all-star in the first half that year. He hit 30 home runs in the first half.
Don't remind
if I
me
remember
about the
correctly.
Second half,
yeah, well,
let's not talk about the second half.
Yeah, Paul Goldschmidt was Paul Goldschmidt.
Right. In his prime.
I mean, Yeah, and it was a special team, and ever since then, they haven't really invested that much in the roster. I know they got JD Martinez for not a lot, because JD Martinez is kind of he was falling out of favor in Detroit, and they were able to get him for not any top prospects or anything like that. And then he flipped the switch and turned it on, and he's been one of the best hitters in baseball ever since 2017, to be fair. So I don't really, and the D-backs were never going to give him that $200 million contract that the Red Sox gave him. As soon as JD Martinez switched to Scott Boras for his agent, I'm like, ah, crap. He's gone.
He gone.
Bye. But then they say, okay, instead of that, here's Steven Souza. Look, he hit 30 home runs. Look, he hits home runs. And he's a decent defender. Great. He gets hurt 2 times, and it doesn't work out. And ever since then, and then the next year, they trade Paul Goldschmidt away. You know, and then they trade Zach Greinke away, and they don't trade Robbie Ray, probably when they should have traded Robbie Ray in 2019. Then they trade him for nothing. And now look, he's going to win the Cy Young Award in the American League. I would have liked to have seen them in 2020. We talked about it. I think they went for it. They saw an opportunity. Mike Hazen and his crew saw an opportunity. Hey, we were good in 2019. They weren't a bad team in 2019. Even after trading Paul Goldschmidt, they were a decent team. They got Zach Gallen, who's been pretty good since they got him. They got Zach Gallen, and they thought, you know, they went in on Madison Bumgarner. They gave him $85 million. They traded for Starling Marte. They brought in Cole Calhoun, who is a good player. He's a good role player. He is. And then COVID happened, and it all went to crap. And ever since then, they've kind of been, okay, Torrey, build us the house, but here's no wood, no nails, and no drywall. Your bullpen is, you know, there's no drywall for the bullpen. Sorry. There's no nails for the outfield. Sorry. Cattell's going to have to play center field again. Sorry. You know, and then. You got to say it. If you want to make an excuse, fine. This team was so freaking injured this year. I'm pretty sure every single major league player they've had has been on the injured list this year. I'm trying to think.
even Rojas went on the aisle for a hot minute with the pinky thing. I think.
Maybe Peralta's the only guy that kind of hasn't been hurt that much.
Yeah, maybe.
But Cole Calhoun's been on the injured list 3 times. Zach Gallen. Since Marte. Spring training, Zach Gallen 3 times, yeah. Marte multiple times with hamstring injuries
for long periods of time.
Yeah, and then you've had, you know, Merrill Kelly miss 3 weeks because of COVID-19. He tested positive for COVID-19. Madison Bumgarner has been on the injured list this year. Carson Kelly had a fractured hand. He got hit on the hand by a Walker Buehler fastball, and then he fouled a ball off his foot. I think he's still playing with a broken toe, so kudos to him, because I'm sure that's not easy to be a catcher playing with a broken toe.
Escobar might not have gone on the IL. Yeah, I can't remember, but he got traded.
He got traded, and Nick Ahmed has been Nick Ahmed. I don't understand why
Cabrera was injured most of the year. Yeah. I'm just putting all the pieces together with you. Yeah, it's pretty much everybody.
There's been just a ton of injuries, and some people will just say, well, that's just an excuse. That's fine. And I don't want that to be an excuse for this team. Like, well, if we weren't injured, we would be winning. Because
they're not a playoff team.
They're not a playoff team, even with everyone on this roster at the start of spring training, 100% healthy. They're not. Sorry. It wasn't going to happen. Now, that stretch where they were playing well was promising. It was. Madison Bumgarner was pitching really well. And he was like, okay, holy crap, if he's going to pitch like that, maybe they can compete. But I don't know. And I don't know. It's so tough to judge Torrey Lovello for this year because of just what he was given to work with. I still don't think he'll be back. I think they will, like you've said in the past, I think someone's got to be the scapegoat, and I think it's going to be Torrey. And I don't think they want to fire him, because that would, you know, I think they like him so much as a human being and as a manager. He's done good things here. He's the, I think, third winningest manager in this team's history, I think.
I saw he has the second most games managed.
Yeah.
Behind Gibby.
Yeah. And everyone, you know, probably, you know, Bob Brenly put the World Series team, you know, he was a huge part of that. But he wasn't here for very long. Right. He was the manager for maybe 3 years. And then it went to Bob Melvin, I believe, after that. But and then there might have been a Wally Backman thing in there where he was the manager like for one day.
Yeah.
And then what, did he get arrested or something? I forget.
Don't remember the whole story.
I forget what it was. But anyway, but like Torrey's done a lot of good stuff here. And I just don't think he'll be back. I don't think they're going to. They would have done it by now if they were going to fire him. There's 2 weeks left in the season. They're not going to fire him with a week left. I don't think. They could, I guess, but
I don't know what that accomplishes.
What does that say? What does that do?
Nothing. Nothing but put it in the news.
No. I think they're just going to let his... If he had another year on his contract, then maybe they would fire him.
I feel like maybe it's a little bit more respect to him to let him fade to black and go and find a new job in the offseason.
I just don't... For me, again, I don't think... I think they will let his contract run its course and not renew it. I don't think he'll be back next year. I think Mike Hazen will be back, but I don't think Torrey will.
I don't disagree with anything that you just said. I think it framed it up pretty well. But you're right in that I've always kind of...
I'm just so, like, two-sided in this, too. You know what? It's hard to, like, well, there have been decisions that Torrey's made that I'm like, what are you doing, Torrey? But then you look at, like, well, who else is he going to go to in the bullpen?
Right.
Brett DeGuss?
Right.
Noe Ramirez? Joe Mantiply? Again?
Yeah.
He's got no ammunition down there.
Right. It's not his fault, per se, that this team is bad, but is he part of the equation? Is he part of the reason that it's not good this year? Sure. We all probably play a role in the I'm saying we collectively, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, we're so important.
We're really a part of the team. No, we're not. But everybody is a part of the equation. Everybody contributes in one way or another, good and bad. And so, but the way that I look at it is this. When you look at the end of the season stat, look at the stats right now. Offensively, the Diamondbacks are 24th in runs, 29th in home runs. They are 9th in striking out. They strike out a lot. 29th in steals. So they're not fast whatsoever. 27th in average, 26th in OPS. This is a bad offensive team. Yeah. So what do? You fire the hitting staff, right? That's typically what you think, right? But here's the problem. When I look at the pitching stats, 29th in ERA, 30th in saves, which I don't love saves as a statistic, but let's just use that as a way of calculating how good the bullpen is, and they're not. 29th in strikeouts, so they don't strike people out. They do all the striking out at the plate, but they don't strike people out. And 29th in whip. So you can't just say, like, they fired the hitting staff last year, and they're still terrible. The pitching staff just changed over a couple of seasons ago, and they're literally dead last. So somebody's got to go. Somebody has to be fired.
Even if, let's say Torrey comes back next year. Let's say he comes back.
Okay.
One guy that I, in my opinion, cannot return is Matt Hergis, the pitching coach. Say what you want about the injuries, fine, whatever. But I will never not reference the whole very cryptic Madison Bumgarner saying, well, we just basically wanted to simplify things again. And I think remember that when he was talking about how he was game planning and how he was pitching so bad to start the year, and then he started pitching better, and they asked him, and he was basically like, well, we changed some stuff, and we simplified some stuff. I think the game plan being put together by Matt Hergis was not to Madison Bumgarner's strengths as a pitcher. I think it was too, not saying Madison Bumgarner isn't smart enough or anything like that. I think it was too analytical, and I don't think Madison Bumgarner is just... Judging by what I see from Madison Bumgarner, I'm going to go out on a limb and say he's probably not that into analytics.
He's kind of old school.
Yeah. In a lot of ways. He's an old school country boy, and I just want to throw the ball where I think it's the best place to throw it. And I want to throw the best pitch that I think is the best pitch for me to throw. And, you know, and I could be dead wrong about this, but it's just my opinion. I think that in part was because of Matt Hergis. And I mean, that's not all his fault. Torrey's in there too. They all go through the game plans together. They have multiple coaches. They have multiple analysts going through things with them, trying to figure out a game plan for each start. So I don't think it's all Matt Hergis, but, and it's also no coincidence that Tyler Gilbert threw a no hitter when Matt Hergis wasn't there.
Yeah, you've believed that for a
while. Just saying. And
I'm not saying I don't believe it, but I know you've believed that.
Matt Hergis missed that game because he was a close contact with Merrill Kelly for COVID reasons. And he comes back, and then Tyler Gilbert's terrible. Not terrible, but he struggled in
back
his next
to
start.
Earth.
He came back to earth. And, I mean, he no-hit the San Diego Padres, who are a good offensive team. They are. So I don't know. I just don't think – and it sucks to have this much turnover at your pitching coach and hitting coach that they've had. Matt Hergis hasn't been here for very long.
Yeah.
He just got here last year. So he hasn't, he's had maybe, this will be his first full season as the D-backs pitching coach. So I don't know. But I mean, if obviously if Torrey doesn't return, none of the coaches are coming
back. Nobody's back.
Managers will build their own coaching staff. So, but if Torrey, let's say he does return, I don't think you can bring Matt Hergis back. I think there has to be another change there. And that's tough on Torrey because that if Torrey comes back and yet you have another this another guy he's brought in that hasn't worked out, and that probably doesn't feel very good.
There's a line in the movie National Treasure. You've seen that movie?
I have not actually seen
National Treasure.
I haven't.
Nicolas Cage?
I know of the movie.
Yeah,
I haven't seen it.
For anybody who hasn't, I mean, the basic synopsis is Nicolas Cage steals the Declaration of Independence because he thinks there's a treasure map on the back of it. And so the FBI catches him, right? In the act, kind of. Like, he doesn't have the declaration, but they know that he stole it.
Yeah.
And the FBI catches him, and they basically say, you're going to help us get it back, and then you're going to go to prison for a very long time. And he says, well, I'd really love to not go to prison. And the FBI director looks him in the eye, and he goes, Ben, somebody's got to go to prison. And that's how I feel about this. Somebody's got to get fired.
Someone's got to be blamed.
Somebody has to take the fall.
Yep.
And we've talked about this before. In any sport, and baseball is no different, in any sport, the coach, the manager, is more likely to be the scapegoat for what happens on the field than the front office. And probably rightfully so, because the front office is responsible for collecting the team, for making...
Sure.
I look at Steve Keim right now and the Cardinals. Steve Keim put together a pretty good team this offseason. I actually think he did a good job with the Cardinals. And then he came out and said just last week, this is the best team we've had. We got leaders. We got all this great stuff. Now it's up to them to go and put it on. And that's exactly right.
Well, and a couple, either last year or a couple years ago, when everyone, you know, after the first year of Vance Joseph, everyone wanted to run Vance Joseph out of town. He's still here and they're playing really well.
Right.
Steve Keim, I remember this, said, we gave Vance Joseph a gun with no bullets in it and said, go.
See what
your
you can
thing.
Do, yeah.
And then now they gave him some ammunition. And that's what I really would have liked to have seen with Torrey. And I think, honestly, before 2020 happened, I think before COVID happened, I think they did that, honestly. They went and traded for Starling Marte. Starling Marte has probably become one of the best outfielders in the game right now. They went out, and after they traded Zach Greinke, they went out and got Madison Bumgarner to be your ace. And they went out and got Cole Calhoun, and they, you know, I think they were trying to give Torrey a better roster, and they did. And then COVID happened and they didn't respond well to it. They didn't. Robbie Ray was the key, I feel like, to everything.
I didn't like giving him up for nothing.
Yeah.
I was in favor of trading Robbie Ray.
I was as well.
But only if you could get something for him.
I was in favor of trading Robbie Ray in 2019.
Yeah.
When there was that rumored deal with the Yankees that would have included Clint Frazier. Now, hindsight, Clint Frazier hasn't done anything for the Yankees because he's had kind of, I think, injury problems or health problems.
He also has good players in front of him on the depth chart.
Right. Well, yeah, Aaron Judge. And
yeah.
Now it's Joey Gallo is there.
Right. So yeah. I don't entirely
anyway,
put on Frazier, but you're right. He hasn't done anything.
But I would have liked that because at the time, I feel like they could have used a young outfielder who has a really high ceiling, but that's just me. But yeah, I think in 2020 I think they went for it. I think they were trying to give Torrey that ammunition that he needed. And it didn't work out. And then COVID happened and it screwed up all their money and their financial situation, you know, and now they can't spend anything. So I don't know.
As we wrap up this conversation, let's file this nugget away as Steve was right.
Oh, great. Albert Pujols played left field.
Albert Pujols played more outfield than any other position for the first 3 years of his career.
He was a left fielder for the first 3 years of his career.
2001, he started 54 games in the outfield, which is more than any other position.
Who was their first baseman?
He did play 23 games at first base. Don't get me wrong. He played all three spots, but he played mostly outfield. 2002, he started 66 games in the outfield, all in left field. 2003, he started 63 games in left field.
Interesting.
Yeah. Mostly an outfielder.
Who was their first baseman back then? Wasn't McGuire still, was it?
No. I don't know. I don't know the answer to that. See, this is what I hate. You always ask me questions I don't know the answer to. It makes me look stupid.
Be smarter.
Taking a look at the playoff race as we get about 2 weeks away from the end of the season. Currently in the American League, the Tampa Bay Rays are still sitting pretty atop the AL East. We don't have to go too much into that. The Astros sitting atop the AL West. They are currently facing the Diamondbacks this weekend. And then the Chicago White Sox in the AL Central. Those are pretty set in stone. The playoff picture, the wild card teams as it sits right now, the Toronto Blue Jays are the first AL wild card, and then the Boston Red Sox are sitting right behind them. Right behind that is the New York Yankees, only half a game back. So the AL East trying to get three AL East teams into the playoffs, and it looks like it's going to happen.
What's insane about the AL East is Tampa has an 8.5 game lead in that division.
And yet, all four teams are playoff viable.
Like, yeah, listen to this. I'm amazed by this. We talk about this almost every week, and I'm still amazed. Toronto is 82-64. The Red Sox are 83-65, and the Yankees are 82-65. They're all so far above 500, and the Yankees are in fourth place.
What really
in that division
stinks is one of those teams and one of those fan bases is not going to make the playoffs.
I know.
At least one. Maybe least two, one. But probably not. But at least one of those is not going to make it.
Yeah, because the only team I think that has a chance to knock off one of those teams is Oakland, and they haven't really been playing that well lately.
They're three games back of Boston, 2.5 back of the Yankees, yeah, who are sitting right behind
but
Boston.
But the Yankees, too, have been struggling as well. They've had their fair share of injuries. But, yeah, and the Red Sox, I thought they were left for dead after that whole COVID outbreak they had, but now they're back in the second wild card spot.
Nobody's really hot there, though. Seattle 4-6, Oakland 5-5, New York 4-6, Boston 4-6. But Toronto 8-2 and looking like a playoff team, which is what I wanted, by the way.
Yeah, I kind of like the Yankees a little bit, but, man, if Toronto gets in there,
they could do damage.
That's going to be so fun to watch.
And they have exciting players.
They do.
Which is half the battle.
Vlad Jr., Bo Bichette, Teoscar Hernandez.
Looking at the National League, the San Francisco Giants are still very much the cream of the crop in the NL West, which is a crowded division, I'll grant you. Milwaukee at the top of the NL Central, and then in the East, you've got Atlanta. But looking at the wild card teams right now, the Dodgers are way ahead of St. Louis. They're the number one team. They're 94-53 and currently a wild card team.
They're definitely,
that's absurd.
They are going to be playing at home at some point in the playoffs. They either this wild card game or not. My friends that are Dodger fans are really scared that St. Louis is going to manage their way in there and just knock them off, because that's what the Cardinals do.
It could happen. The Dodgers, by the way, are only one game back of San Francisco, so it's not impossible that they win the division,
right.
But the Giants have just fended them off all season long.
And the Giants, I believe they just lost two of three, I think they lost their last series to the Padres, which was big to me, because that was huge, because the Dodgers were facing the Diamondbacks, and they got a sweep over the D-backs. Padres, and it's been kind of the same old story all year. When the Dodgers win, the Giants win. When the Dodgers lose, the Giants win. It's been hard for the Dodgers to gain ground. They're only
8-2 in their last 10.
Yeah,
and you would think that would be great to catch up, but the Giants are also 8-2.
Yeah, I know.
The last 10. So it's like, all right, you can't catch
up.
But
here's the thing: the Giants have now lost 2 games in a row, and the Dodgers have won 6 in a row.
Fair enough.
So
tide could be turning.
Yeah,
we'll see how that turns out. San Diego, like you mentioned,
I wouldn't be shocked if, because the Giants, like, they've been so good, but I mean, they have experience there. They still got guys that have been on their World Series team, but a lot of young guys they're counting on, like Lamont Wade Jr., Tyro Estrada, their pitcher rotation, Anthony DeSclafani, he's all right. I mean, like, he's probably their third best pitcher, but he's just been okay.
There's a lot of other teams that could be in the mix. San Diego is only half a game back of St. Louis. Cincinnati's 1 game back. Philadelphia, 2.5. And then there's a couple other teams that are single digits. New York Mets are 5 games out. That's still
Rockies,
feasible.
8.5 games back.
Right. The Rockies are kind of in it.
This is a big series for both the Dodgers and the Reds. The Dodgers are in Cincinnati to face the Reds this weekend. So that's huge for probably more so for the Reds, because the Dodgers are going to make the playoffs no matter what. They've already clinched a postseason berth.
Right.
But the Reds are really trying for that wild card spot. So,
as we mentioned, the Diamondbacks take on the Houston Astros for 3 games. They are currently the leaders in the clubhouse, so to speak, in the AL West. So not an easy schedule ahead for the Diamondbacks. You get Astros, Braves, Dodgers, Giants, and then Rockies. So I would hate to say smooth sailing on the way out of this season, but we'll see how that turns out.
It would totally be our luck. We're going to be like, yeah, they're definitely going to lose 100 games. What if they go undefeated in this?
I'd be open to it, but then you don't get the number 1 overall pick. So, you know what? I'm not open to it.
Speaking of that, they're still tied with the Orioles. They end in a tie with the Orioles will get it because of a stupid rule.
Yeah, we figured out that the Orioles and the D-backs tied last year also.
Yeah.
So they had to go back to the previous year. So if they tie this year, we have to go back to last year's tie and then go back to the year before that.
And where the Orioles lost 108 games or something like that.
Yeah.
And here we go.
Let's just put it... We've all been calling it. It's tank season. Let's do it. It's tank season. Let's get the number 1 pick, baby. Let's do it. All right. We thank you so much for checking out the podcast this week. I'm Steve Zinsmeister. That's Cody Fincher as well. It is the Ain't No Fang podcast. Thank you for listening here at ArizonaSports.com and on the Arizona Sports app.